clip a doctor from India last night.
These days, we have Sir Christopher Bagatelle's marvelous sewer system, which is cleansed nightly by firing a massive steel ball through the tunnels. Back then, however, huge waves of sewage often swept through London, swamping the impoverished East End in ghastliness.
Oh, Lorks, it is a massive metaphor for what life is like for us.
As the effluent swept through that day, I was struck by an idea, as well as several unsavory lumps of yuck.
If I could stop these sewage waves, the poor would benefit greatly. Harry Biscuit, as my best friend and... What are you doing?
I'm trying to dress this chicken in a dinner jacket to prove my theatre theory.
Well, would you also undertake the saving of London from sewage?
Gladly.
No. Say, one for the stalls, please.
My crusade had begun. Next, I wrote to the manager of my bin factory in the north, instructing him to ensure the conditions there were the best of any industrial hellhole in the country. And Pippa drew up her plans for Bin Fam.
I have commissioned an enormous statue of myself helping the poor.
But that will not feed them.
It will if it is made of bacon.
Is it to be made of bacon?
No. But round the bottom, carved in marble, will be our motto, making the poor poor, poor no more.
Charity is against God's will. For does the Bible not say, stuff the poor, they only have themselves to blame?
You hopeless, flint-hearted gorgon!
At least I'm not a woolly-minded, self-righteous cow.
Come, that is enough girlish banter. Harry, how are your anti-sewage plans?
I have three plans, Pip-Bin. The first is very simple. I shall raise every building in London by 7.25 feet so the sewage can wash beneath.
How?
Some sort of massive lever.
And your second plan?
My second plan is swans.
How would that work?
They could do swan stuff. Swanny things.
And your third plan?
Have I already said swans?
My heart grew heavy and squidged my liver as I realized that for all his devoted enthusiasm, Harry's plans were inherently a bit twitty.
Harry, is this project beyond your capabilities?
No, Pip-Bin. I could do it standing on my head. Watch. Oh, turns out I can't.
Dear friend, perhaps your talents could be used in other ways, such as sitting down quietly, on your own. In a locked room. Not designing sewage systems.
Are you asking me to resign?
Maybe a bit.
Well, I won't.
Then reluctantly, old friend, I must fire you.
I have been fired! It's like the Overpants fiasco all over again!
The next day, I advertised for a new engineer in the Effluent Gazette. Applicants were instantly forthcoming.
Get that, will you, Harry?
Are you sure that's not beyond my capabilities? Ow, my finger! Ah! Oh, hello, man in an ill-fitting wig. Who are you?
Hello. I've come from Bristol to apply for the job of Chief Sewage Engineer. I am Mr. Watt...
Inventor of the steam engine?
I haven't finished. Mr. Watt Trevithick Stevenson Brunel Telford.
Any relation to those famous engineers?
Yes.
What engineerifications have you accomplished?
I built the Clifton Dispensing Bridge.
Britain's first combined bridge and pharmacists.
And I was the first to place a colander on top of a locomotive to steam vegetables en route. Plus, I invented the first manual gearbox for robot cows and the wind-powered kite.
Yes, the old rain-powered ones were rubbish. Sir, you are hired.
Result! Sorry, I like to celebrate every new job with an evil laugh.
He quickly drew up an impressive-looking plan.
Thereby entering this sewage superhighway and finally being dumped on the coast of France.
Excellent.
Although, you've made a rather basic error. You've completely missed out the swans.
Yes, that is what makes it excellent. The scheme is approved.
Splendid. My plan is working.
You have lost your West Country accent.
Splendid. My plan is working. Lovely job. Mine's a cider.
The mighty work commenced, and I resolved to go north to check on the new conditions in my bin factory. Alas, as I set off, I was reminded of the urgency of destroying poverty when I saw the wretched form of a young street sweeper, and my heart filled with pity.
Oh, the wheel is slowing. It turns less quickly.
What is this wheel, child?
Just a rough beggar boy's metaphor for his own impending death, noble sir.
Actually, he had been dying for months, lying in the gutter making metaphorical allusions to the approach of grim death.
I merely await the addition of a pinch of cinnamon, and then my crumble will be ready for cooking.
I wiped a tear from my eye, stepped over him, and headed for the north. As I grew close, the sky was lit with the multicolored glow of smelt works and ghastly industrial accidents. Everywhere was the stench of sweaty toil. My factory was in a small suburb of Coketown called Diet Coketown. I immediately hurried to the office of my factory manager, Mr. Bit Too Kind.
Mr. Bin, you look well.
And you look different, Mr. Bit Too Kind. You've changed your hairstyle. And your nose. Indeed, your entire face. And your voice is distinctly unsimilar to that which you had before.
That is because I'm not Mr. Bit Too Kind. He resigned, and after the funeral, I took his place. My name is Whack Wallop, Grinder Whack Wallop.
No! I have met two of your brothers and 11 of your cousins, and they were all evil. I can only assume you are also.
Ah, but if you saw 13 dogs with 5 legs, you might assume that the 14th dog you saw would also have 5 legs. Yet you would be wrong, for dogs have 4 legs.
Are you saying you're not evil?
Yes.
Then I apologize for implying you are an evil 5-legged dog. I see you received my letter, for conditions in your office are much improved. Is that real fur you're wearing?
Yes, Welsh mountain tiger trimmed with dodo feathers. Would you care for a glass of unicorn liqueur?
After I have inspected my factory.
Of course. If you wait here for a few seconds, I shall ensure everything is ready.
Those few seconds turned out to be 7 hours, during which I heard copious activity. Presumably the normal, completely unsuspicious workings of a factory.
Now, if you'd like to accompany me...
The factory was delightful.
Notice the very fresh flowers and the uplifting murals of joy.
The paint is still wet.
We redo them every day, lest the workers get bored. We constantly feed them champagne pie and lobster cordial.
Gosh, I am an enlightened industrialist.
You're both kind and wise, Mr. Bin, like a generous owl.
You, worker man, what is your name?
Samuel Suffering, sir.
Do you like working here?
Yes. It is not now and never has been awful, and no one is terrified of Mr. Whackwallop.
Of course not. I'm lovely. Ow!
Did you just punch him?
Only with love.
My visit lifted my heart. At this rate, all poverty everywhere would be ended by next Tuesday. Alas, progress in London was not as swift.
The charity proceeds splendidly. This week I had 29 lunches with other charitable folk to discuss poverty.
Desist from your self-congratulatory catering arrangements. Tomorrow I shall take my entire fortune from the bank and you will distribute it directly to the poor.
But giving them money is so patronising.
What would you do, dear wife?
I would tour the East End shouting, "This is your own fault. Pull yourselves together."
Where is your compassion?
The poor do not need compassion. They need a boot up their malnourished backsides. As the Bible says, kick them. Kick the stupid poor.
You vicious, heartless beast.
You patronizing, lily-livered wimp.
Leaving them to their uplifting moral discussion, I sought out Harry.
Pip-Bin, I have invented a new poverty-relieving device. Behold my new aid-distributing cannon. Now rich people can help the poor without going anywhere near them. I shall load this shepherd's pie, aim it at a distant povo, and then fire it.
Ah! It has knocked him out, possibly killed him.
I probably should have taken it out of the dish first.
It is excellent, Harry.
Really?
No.
Well, behold my next idea. Swans!
Harry, why don't you come with me to see how the sewer system is coming along?
Because I don't want to.
Come anyway.
So we set out, once more compassionately stepping over the dying street sweeper and his heartbreaking metaphors.
I fear my slinky is nearly down all the stairs.
Well, good luck with that.
At the end of the street was a gaping hole, the entrance to the sewer and the mighty things underway within. Vast caverns stretched beneath London like a gigantic brick-lined rabbit warren. But these tunnels were the work of man, not a 37-foot-tall brick-laying rabbit.
Ah, Mr. Vin, game progresses well.
Game progresses well.
Cludgeman Dam is in place and the Hunterman Grouting is nearly finished.
No, Cludgeman Dam and the Hunterman Grouting, no swans. No.
Oh, shut your face, you swan-obsessed simpleton. I mean... Ooh, hush up, cider, girtlash.
My sewage system was going to be a triumph. And my spirits soared further when on the way home I encountered Pippa distributing my money.
Hello, scabby old man. How are you?
Oh, I have this dreadful cough. I haven't eaten it in 3 years.
You suffer from both consumption and lack of consumption. Have some money.
God bless you, ma'am.
And I'll have it back, thank you.
Rightly, what are you doing?
By giving them money, you take away their self-respect. And I shall take your chair as well, rancid poor person.
Why?
Does not the hymn say, stand up for Jesus?
You are being ridiculous, Rightly.
Then you call God ridiculous. What does the Bible not say? He or she or it who calleth another man or woman or thing ridiculous calleth the Lord himselfeth ridiculous, particularly Pippa.
Where does it say that?
The Book of Badgers.
Do I get to keep the money or not?
Incoming!
Well, it is a moot point, as Harry has killed the poor man with his aid cannon.
While Harry's misguided yet oddly incredibly well-aimed efforts caused our best friendship to wane somewhat, my best friendship with Mr. Watt Trevithick Stevenson Brunel Telford waxed faster than a hyperactive French polisher. At the end of the day, we would often share a glass of whiskey and a cigar.
On second thought, perhaps we could have a glass of whiskey and a cigar each. So, the system is nearly finished?
It is. My plan is nearly at fruition. my plan is nearly at fruition, Cheddar Gorge, Wookie Hole, Luar, Gert Lush, where's he to?
Hello, Pitbin. Oh, you, Mr. No Swan's bad engineer. And you're having whiskey and cigars. Like we used to do. Oh, you prefer him now.
Did you want something, Harry?
You've got a letter.
Dear Mr. Bin, you were fooled by Mr. Whackwallop. Come to the factory again, stay a while, and you will see the truth. Yours, Jeremiah P. Exploited Person. No, I must go at once. The Whackwallop will surely recognize me.
You could go in disguise.
Don't be ridiculous, Harry.
What if you went in disguise?
Excellent idea.
Oh, referee!
Though I myself have never been fooled by a disguise, lesser people often are. Incidentally, dear engineer, your hair seems to have slipped down over your face.
The recent hard work has loosened my scalp.
A perfectly plausible explanation.
I hurried north, passing the street sweeper.
Oh, the lasagna is nearly defrosted.
And on the way, disguised myself brilliantly with a false beard, a false leg, a false arm, a false head, and a second-hand Geordie accent I bought from a used dialect shop. With trepidation, I approached Foreman Whackwallop.
Can I help you, strange three-legged, three-armed, two-headed, one-bearded man?
Arish, I'm looking for a job.
The factory was utterly changed. Everything was cruel and hard, and the pace of work relentless.
Too slow! Release the dogs!
He pulled a lever and 7 dead dogs fell from the ceiling onto an exhaust.
Right, take his place.
What do I do?
Stand there and wait to die. And while you do, make bins.
Workers operated the binning jennies, while behind them, huge steam-powered braters swung back and forth, chafing them like human cheddar. It did not seem quite the workers' paradise I had intended.
Bin production is down, so today is Starving Leopard Tuesday.
I decided I had to reveal my true identity.
Workers, listen to me. Your torments are at an end, for I am Pip Bin, owner of this factory. Also, the leopard finally appears to be full.
You don't look like Pip Bin.
Let me remove my false accoutrements.
Oh, hello, Mr. Bin.
The time for inhumanity is gone.
Hooray!
I pledge an end to poverty, misery, and pain.
Hooray!
What about the leopard?
I promise no more leopardy jeopardy.
Hooray!
Now go forth and live your lives in peace, tolerance, and forgivenessness.
Hooray!
Right, let's go and kill Whack Wallop.
I followed them to Whack Wallop's office, where they were preparing to tear him limb from limb.
I may die, Bin, but my work is done. For I forged that letter to lure you away from London, and now Mr. Benevolent's scheme is like a bottle with no cork. That is to say, unstoppable. Your new sewer system is...
1, 2, 3, pull!
No, wait!
It was too late. Before he could tell me, the workers pulled him apart like a gory Christmas cracker.
Oh, I only got the small bit.
My sewage scheme was in danger. I sprinted from the factory and back to London, forgetting it was 200 miles away. It took me 3 weeks, but finally I arrived in the main sewage hall with a bad stitch, several blisters, and a nasty case of jogger's nipple.
It is nearly finished. And Bin will discover the truth.
No, surely not.
Oh, I didn't see you there. I meant... It's nearly finished. I've got a brand new combine harvester.
For a moment, I thought you were Mr. Benevolent.
Well, I do impressions.
I love impressions. Who else do you do?
The Duke of Wellington. Grr, take that, Napoleon. Where are my eponymous boots?
Brilliant. It is almost as if he is in the room.
Reassured, I look forward to the grand opening the next day. Pippa and Ripley joined me, but Harry remained at home, putting the finishing touches to his latest invention, an automatic sulking machine. In his place, I took along the terminally metaphorical street sweeper.
What a treat, even though my sausages are nearly browned on all sides.
People of London, I must start by thanking Pip Bin. Without him, this would not have happened. And I would not be in a position to succeed in my most evil plan yet.
Oh, my bread might be so stale that even toasting it won't make it edible. But isn't that the sinister Mr. Benevolent?
Merely an impression.
Now I shall remove my wig. It was very tight. Discard my accent. Ta-da! And reveal my true identity.
It is Mr. Benevolent.
No, dear sister, it is an impression.
Oh, she's right, Bin, for I am he, and you have just naively funded my evil scheme in the name of good.
Oh, excellent. Now do your Duke of Wellington.
Silence! Seize them.
Rough-hewn navvies seized us, and I realized that it almost certainly, quite possibly, might actually sort of be my nemesis himself a bit.
No! Mr. Benevolent, how did you fool me for so long?
You know, I genuinely had no idea.
We were bundled aboard a carriage, and as it took us who knew where, he explained his evil scheme.
I have dug all the way under London, and now, using hot air balloons, I shall steal the whole city, float it across the Channel, and sell it to France.
But that is not at all what I had in mind.
The carriage halted on Hampstead Heath, and we saw hot air balloons floating all across London, tethered to church spires, lampposts, and heavy docks.
All that holds the city in place is this one long bramble root, and I have some secateurs. There, tis done.
There was a mighty, straining sound, and London began to rise.
How can you sell London to the French?
Quite easily. I shall say, bonjour, the French. voulez-vous acheter la capitale d'Angleterre? They will say, oui, how much? I shall say, 8 million livres, or 20 million francs, à la current exchange rate. They will agree, and London will be Londres forevermore.
Something will stop you.
I doubt it. Though I have been thwarted in my schemes at the last instant every single time before, this time I shall succeed.
No, you won't!
Harry Biscuit!
I'm still feeling pretty optimistic.
Then prepare to be unpretty optimisticated. For behold, my aid cannon, which I shall use to shoot down your balloons.
Using what as ammunition?
Swans! And Pitbin's entire fortune, which he left in the house for charitable uses. I have changed all £3 million into coins. The man behind me in the bank queue is furious. Ready, aim, fire!
It began with a volley of swans, which achieved little by giving them a head start for their winter migration. But then he reloaded with coins, and they tore into the balloons, bursting them one by one, until there was but a single balloon left.
And the last one? Oh, no! Oh, out of coins! Oh, if only I'd checked down the back of the sofa before I left.
Harry had failed. Slowly, the solitary remaining balloon tugged London towards its ghastly Gallic fate. But then...
Oh, noble sir, my microwave might be about to go ping. I can't let him nick London. Fire me at the balloon.
The brave street sweeper climbed into the cannon and Harry fired one last time.
Here we go!
Yes! It has worked. And what is more, in destroying the balloons, my money has finally been scattered across London and distributed to the poor.
Foiled again. But at what cost to you, Bin? The poor now have all your money, which in turn makes you poor. I shall enjoy seeing you in poverty's misery. I go now, but I will return.
You have returned sooner than I imagined.
I forgot my hat. Ah, there it is. I go again now.
Then we heard a voice from a nearby gorse bush.
Oh, blimey. Who'd have thought that being fired from a cannon at a balloon and then falling several thousand feet into a gorse bush would hurt so much?
Tell me, boy, what is your name?
It is Joe. Joe Sentimental Overload.
Well, Joe, henceforth I shall take you into my home and raise you as my own.
The train is nearly permanently delayed, and there is no replacement bus service. The man reading the dictionary out loud is as far as zygomorphic, and the learner driver has successfully performed an emergency stop. Long story short, I'm dead.
And he was. But the boy, so poor and frankly whingy in life, had achieved nobility in death. We buried him where he fell, which was painful due to the aforementioned gorse bush, and contemplated our new lives.
I have no more money.
And I no more swans.
Oh, this is awful. We are poor.
I thought poverty was God's will.
For the poor, yes, but not for me.
Take heart, dear wife, for though we are now poor, we shall still be happy.
Yeah, right.
But as a bitter wind began to blow, I wondered if I'd done the right thing, and if we would ever be truly happy again.
And that explains why you've remained poor to this very day.
Imbecile, is it not clear that I'm extremely rich?
Of course. The 900-bedroom house. The fact that when you bought a country retreat, that country was Scotland.
Enough. Return next week, and you shall hear how poverty gnawed at our souls, how I restored myself to respectability, and how Mr. Benevolent returned to ruin my life completely.
B.
Bleak Expectations was written by Mark Evans and starred Richard Johnson as Philip Bin, Tom Allen as Young Pip, Anthony Head as Mr. Gently Benevolent, James Barkman as Harry Biscuit, Jeffrey Whitehead as Grinder Whackwallop, Sarah Hadland as Rightfully and Lily, Susie Kane as Pippa, and Mark Evans as Sundry Exploited Factory Worker. The producer was Gareth Edwards. Bleak Expectations by Mark Evans. Volume 3, Chapter the 4th. A horrible life unruined, then re-ruinated a lot.
Grr. Yet also... Bah. Yet also...
You sound conflicted, sir.
I am as conflicted as an Italian who has been told he may have as many cheap, shiny suits and lascivious glances at women as he desires, yet first he must fight properly in a war. For my idiot son-in-law, Sourquill, is due. Yet he will bring my beloved daughter and double-beloved grandson.
Your daughter and her baby, sir.
Hurrah!
Also your son-in-law.
Father, please be polite to my husband.
Very well. No, I can't do it.
Do not worry, Sir Philip. I have come to see your abuse as the expression of affection by different means.
Well, it isn't.
At least I shall not hear your rudeness, for I must leave.
So soon?
Alas, I am late for my suffragette's welding class.
Still being emancipated, dear Lily?
I shall not rest until women are treated equally the world over. Except, perhaps, in the Northeast, where they'd find it all a bit weird.
Now, the boy and I can enjoy your adventures.
Can he understand them?
With this device, yes.
What is that?
The mechanical baby translating engine invented by Professor Charles Babel. Let me demonstrate. I wish to say, it is a lovely day. I write that down, put it into the machine, power up the flywheel, calibrate the lingua gauge, then simply ratchet down the translator throttle, scringe the gearings, and wait. Behold the translation. A goo 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 wah wah. He has punched me.
That's my boy.
Now I see. No, I calibrated incorrectly, and instead of meaning it is a lovely day, the phrase a goo 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 wah wah means you're an ugly little sack of milk and dribble. Now he has been sick into the mechanism. And the machine is broken. At least it has not exploded. It has exploded.
He hates your devices. Truly, he is my grandson. Now, last time, you heard how I thwarted the plan of my evil, undead ex-guardian, Mr. Benevolent, to steal London and sell it to the French. Alas, this had cost all my money, and now I and my family were homeless. Yet, as we wandered the streets, I was oddly happy.
This is a wonderful new start. For only when you have nothing are you truly free.
Or indeed truly hungry, miserable and cold.
But poverty is great. You take gold carriages everywhere and you are friends with the Queen.
That is when you are rich.
Ah, but then poverty is even better, for I hate gold carriages and the Queen. That is not true. Obviously, I love the Queen. She's brilliant.
Dear Sister Pippa, surely you feel the freedom of poverty?
Well, yes, dear brother, but then again I also feel the anguish of no money. We are poor, so poor. Oh, I am swooning. Hold me, dear husband Harry.
Oops, butterfingers.
We should take her inside to recover. Oh, that's right, we can't. We haven't got a house.
Well, we shall make one from whatever flotsam and jetsam we find on the banks of old Father Thames.
Alas, old Father Thames turned out to be a miserly father indeed. The sort who makes you sit on his desk as a paperweight so he can claim your food as a legitimate business expense.
What have we found, dear wife Rightly?
Two dead bodies and some mud.
Dear Sister Pippa?
Two dead bodies and some mud.
Harry?
I struck lucky because I found
two dead bodies and some mud.
I fared better with three dead bodies and some mud. Now, let us build.
We worked hard, and soon our new home was finished.
Is it not delightful?
As delightful as any corpse and mud house.
How wretched is our lot! I may swoon again! Hold me, Harry!
I really should practice this catching thing.
We lit a mud fire and huddled round it all night. By morning, our mud house had been baked into a crockery house.
Essentially, we now live in a sort of giant mug.
And we are the used tea bags in the bottom, for we have nothing left.
You are wrong. We have the greatest thing of all, our dignity.
Just then, a double-decker coach and horses pulled up, and a crowd decarriaged and entered our house, led by a horribly familiar figure.
Afternoon, Pip-Bin, don't mind us. Now, on your left, you will see the ghastly hovel in which Pip-Bin now lives.
Mr. Benevolent, what are you doing?
I'm showing my tour group around your pathetic new life.
We just love your hovel. It's so quaint.
Thanks very much.
You'd be amazed at how many people have signed up for my Witness Pip-Bin's Humiliation guided tour.
How many?
Seven. But soon hordes will flock to see your misery. Oh, I nearly forgot. I brought you a housewarming present.
It is a body and some mud.
Perhaps you could build an extension.
He left, but I burned with a sense of injustice and fury, like a fire kindled with unfair twigs and stoked with grumpy bellows.
Mr. Benevolent has stolen our dignity, and I am a laughingstock.
I thought poverty was dignified and fun.
That was before people started laughing at me. You and I must get jobs, Harry.
Well, Pippa and I can work as well.
Oh, at the thought, my heart beats wildly. I am going to swoon.
Harumble! I caught her! Though I probably shouldn't have then raised my arms in triumph.
Work? You and Pippa? Never.
Back then, it was illegal for women of genteel birth to work. Everyone knew of Lady Bordertome, who had disguised herself as one of the lower orders and got a job in a shop. Her husband found out, and for the crime of letting down her social class, she was executed by being dressed in a fox costume and hunted to death.
Harry and I alone will support this family. Come, noble friend, let us earn our bread through the sweat of our brow.
Can you actually do that?
We tramped the streets all day with no luck and returned home disconsolate.
How did you fare, dear brother, dear husband?
Alas, I could not even get a job holding a sign saying croquet sale.
And it turns out you can't swap brow sweat for bread. That baker was furious.
Then what about this flyer I found in the street?
Help wanted, a Dr. Whackwallop's menagerie of oddities. Where I see the name Whackwallop, I fear no good.
Do you ever want to eat again or not?
Well, I definitely do, particularly if it's pancakes.
And so, Brightly and Pippa accompanied us to Dr. Whackwallop's menagerie in search of work. It was a place of pain and cruelty, filled with what back then we called freaks, but what nowadays we would more sensitively call bizarringtons.
Look! A giant man biting the heads off chickens.
And next to him, a giant chicken biting the heads off men.
We passed a tap-dancing snake, a vertiginous giraffe, which kept fainting, standing up again, then fainting once more, and a vegetarian lion.
See, as he pounces on a lentil bake. Now, I am Barker Whackwallop. What do you want?
We seek work.
Can you perform freakish tricks? Can you juggle jelly or listen to the Marseillaise without being sick?
I have a trick. I can remove my trousers over my own head.
No, I can't.
But wait a second. Are those women you have with you? I've always got jobs for women.
Get in.
What choice was there? Harry and I left them and walked back along the river, the cold stars twinkling down on our plight like a vast number of one-eyed cats stuck to a massive ceiling.
Ah, Harry, if only the heavens could give us inspiration. But wait, what is this washing at my feet? Why, it is a pen. A and a waterproof sack containing thousands of sheets of paper. And now a book entitled How to Write a Novel. Surely I'm being told something.
You are to become a bookshelf.
I know. I am to become a famous author. I must start immediately.
Many years before, I had tried writing with no success. But back then, River had not given me a book entitled How to Write a Novel. I opened it eagerly.
Chapter 1. Stop reading this How to Write a Novel book and start writing your novel. Chapter 2. Why are you still reading this book? Start writing your novel. And the remaining chapters are similar, though with more swearing. Perhaps I'd best just start.
I grasped my pen, and the words flowed from me like wine from a barrel that had been pierced in a comedic sword fight. They only stopped when Harry returned, some hours later.
Ah, Harry, let me just finish the sentence and I shall be with you. Wrench the spanner from the anteater's hand. There.
How goes the writing?
I shall read you what I have written. Make yourself comfortable, old friend. The man wrenched the spanner from the anteater's hand. Oh, I could have sworn I'd written more than that. But I've been writing solidly for 8 hours. At this rate, it will take me just over 120 years to write a novel.
Goodness, Pipbin. You write almost as quickly as I can read. I've been reading Moby Dick for 12 years.
Ah, call me Ishmael.
Oh, you've ruined it now! Aha! The girls are back. How was work, dear wife?
I have a job as a bearded lady.
But you have no beard?
But I shall have. I am on a diet of manly things. Steak, beer, scotch eggs, late-night kebabs, and no fruit. And I am straining hard to grow bristles.
Let me kiss you in congratulation. Ooh, stubble rash. Weird.
And what about you, dear wife?
I do filing and accounts. Definitely nothing sordid or demeaning or awful.
In truth, working at all was demeaning for them. I had to rescue them. And this new urgency inspired my writing as never before.
There, finished.
That is an enormous book, Pipbin. It must have taken you at least 200 years to write. Which means we are in the future.
No, I merely remembered an old writerly aphorism which inspired me. Write what you know. Make yourself comfortable again, old friend.
Uh-huh.
I know that cheese is lighter than metal. That a dachshund is not a furry snake on stilts. Also, that a woman is just a boy who didn't try hard enough while growing up.
I continued for several hours.
And I know that whilst both apples and wood float in water, wood crumble is horrid. The End by Pip Bin. Well, what do you think? Harry?
Sorry, Pip Bin. I fell asleep. Nothing to do with you, of course. It's that dreadful book you're reading.
Alas, my book was awful. I began to fear that we'd never save our wives from their drudgery. But then Harry made a discovery.
Pip-Bin, look, I was digging some mud for supper, and I wondered, how far down does mud go? So I kept digging and digging, and finally, I struck oil.
Harry, that is amazing.
Yes, I shall use the oil to make salad dressing. And soon I shall be a vinaigrettianaire.
Then our wives may return to womanly pursuits, such as simpering, liking horses a bit too much, and hats.
Actually, I quite like Pippa as a bearded lady. It tickles when I kiss her.
You do not worry, she is too manly.
All right, Harry, mate, let me just remove my pipe and kiss you.
Tickles.
Anyone fancy a beer? Maybe an arm wrestle?
Ooh, both please.
Seeing Harry and Pippa so happy together, I sought out my own dear wife. Alas, would that I had not found her. For there she stood in a vile back alley, garishly clothed, leaning against a lamppost and talking to a man.
Might you be looking for company, sir?
What sort of company?
Maybe a little cockney company.
So I were. How much would it cost?
It's a shilling for a dropped H, half a crown for a glottal stop, and for the whole rhyming slang, a pony.
Here you go.
Naughty boy. Now, take the weight off your plates. The meat will have a right old knees up.
Have you any hake or haddock?
Have I any hake or haddock? I shall bleed and well, Coco.
Rightly, What are you doing?
Lorks, it's my old man. I mean, dear husband, what a pleasant surprise.
I really must be going.
Bolton, what about me pony, you pox-munching job?
You are no more than a common cockney, flattening your vowels for money. Dropping your H's for any man that asks you.
Dear husband, I'm only trying to earn a living.
What's going on? You woman, go and jelly those eels.
My wife will cocknify no longer. I forbid it.
You cannot stop her. She loves the work.
It is true, dear husband. I find I am a cockney to my core and an EastEnder to my blimey.
Not only is she my best cockney, she's the only one who can, well, how shall I put this, tame my man-elephant.
Is that a euphemism?
He merely refers to one of our wretched freaks.
An elephant who, by some vileness of nature, has the features of a man.
He led us to a cruelly disfigured creature. It was an elephant, but with a full head of hair and a side parting. One of his ears was pink and tiny, and he wore a monocle and spats. He was also pathetically trying to fill in an application for membership of the Garrick Club.
Your wife is the only one who can control him.
Dance, you freak, dance!
Now leave him before I cover you in peppers, olives and tomato puree and throw you to the vegetarian lion.
Humiliation spurred me on. I had to write or lose my wife forever. Alas, I became even worse.
This is 7,000 pages that just say, all work and no play makes Pip a dull boy.
Damn! What news of your oil exploitation?
Alas, the salad dressing is truly disgusting and highly flammable. So instead, I am going to dig to the centre of the earth.
Why?
The earth has a crust, like a delicious pie. Where there is crust, there must also be filling. True, mud and oil are disgusting, but according to pie theory, can yummy fillings like steak and kidney or apple and blackberry be far away?
Yes.
Come on, Pip-Bin. When am I ever wrong? Apart from usually or always.
Harry had his theory, I had nothing. Until the day I bumped into a local character by the name of Phil Sykes, who was out walking his dog. Countdown.
Morning, Mr. Bin. Tush poo countdown.
What?
I told him to shut up. In an anagram. It's the only language he understands.
Really?
Yeah, watch. Tis. See? I told him to sit.
Tis? Not exactly a hard anagram, is it?
He's only a dog.
And he hasn't sat.
He's working it out. Now, I've often wondered, Mr. Bin, how did a rich toff like you end up being a poor toff like you?
Well, since you ask, I was born in 1806, the first child of Thomas and Agnes Bin, conceived the year before in celebration of the victory at Trafalgar.
I continued for some time, listing all the events that have brought me to my current circumstances.
But that is the best story I have ever heard, and I've heard five. You should put that in a book.
Of course!
As his dog finally sat, I rushed home and started writing, not stopping until at last I had a manuscript I was proud of. The story of my life.
It's good, but I do feel like I've read it before.
No, Harry, you have lived it before, for it is as much your life as mine, though I shall take all the royalties.
I got a meeting with London's largest publisher, Printy Bookingtons and Co.
Ooh, this is sensational. What's it called?
My life and some, or indeed most, of the things that have happened in it up to a certain point by Pip Bin.
I love it, but let's just change it to something a bit more snappy, like, Bleak Expectations.
Doesn't work.
He paid me an advance in cash, and I was instantly free from poverty. On my way out, however, a Mr. Benevolent-shaped shadow fell over my success. It was Mr. Benevolent standing between me and the sun.
Ah, you may have some money again, Pip Bin, but it will soon go. Your book will be published, and it will be awful, and no one will buy it, and soon it will be in the 8 books for a shilling pile, and then you'll be poor again, and then you'll end up a bitter old man with a bottom drawer full of unpublished novels, until finally you ironically die in a library, when you find your stupid book isn't stocked there, and you shake the shelves in rage, and they fall on you, and the last sight you ever see will be the copy of your book, which actually was there all along, but the last date stamp will show it's only ever been borrowed once, 43 years before, and that was by mistake.
That's a very complex prediction.
I hired some actors, workshopped it a lot. We're thinking of taking it to Edinburgh.
I hurried to Whack Wallop's menagerie with a joyful heart, an upbeat lung, and an optimistic gallbladder.
You may return to idle lady pursuits at once, dear Pippa, and rightly.
Well, that's awfully good of you, old boy. This beard is really quite itchy.
I've already purchased you a razor.
Righto.
Oh, what a relief. I am a woman again.
Rightly, you may cease cockneying.
But what if I don't wanna?
Your wife is vital to my business. Now leave, or I shall set my freaks on you.
Never, you scoundrel.
He turned to the cages full of mutazoids and opened them.
Now, get him!
Fear gripped me as the wrong'uns lumbered out. But then I realized I was not the object of their twisty-faced fury.
No, I said him, not me, him!
The Bizarringtons had the light of vengeance in their eyes as they surrounded Whackwallop. He was about to reap what he had sown. And it was a crop of cruel barley and painful cherry tomatoes.
What have I done to deserve this? Apart from all the things I've done to deserve this!
First, the tap-dancing snake danced on him and bit him.
Ow! I've been soft-shoe shuffled upon and bitten!
Then the vertiginous giraffe toppled onto him.
Ow! I've been giraffed!
He was so badly squashed he looked like a large parsnip, and the vegetarian lion ate him.
Oh, did that have measles?
Dear Ripley, Whack Wallop is dead and you are free again. Now come, let us rejoin the middle classes.
May I bring the man elephant?
As a symbol of your compassion.
I was thinking social climbing tool. But yes, compassion as well. A bit.
My book was an instant bestseller and I was rich again. The reviews were excellent. Apart from one, though I've no idea how Mr. Benevolent had become literary editor of the Times.
This is a really, really bad book, and no one should buy it. Unless perhaps you want to buy it, become enraged at how bad it is, take it to Pip Bin's house, demand your money back, and then punch him. Don't buy this book. Do not buy it. 5 stars out of 900.
Having been poor, I was determined to help others with my newfound money. But how?
If you paid for a massive tunnelling machine, I could easily reach the centre of the earth. And then we could feed the world, for at the centre of the earth is an inexhaustible supply of meringue. Probably.
Then you shall have the funds.
Harumble! And under my own theory of geo-Pavlovaism, there should be cream and fruit down there as well.
Meanwhile, the man-elephant settled into his new home.
How socially useful he is, for Lady Sneerington is coming round for tea to meet him.
We must practice. Slice the cake, you freak.
Thanks to my tale of riches to rags, to riches to rags, to worse rags, to rags, to riches again, I achieved a certain fame. I was profiled in Warmth magazine, and Good Day, Sir, did a 7-page etching spread of my house. Wherever I went, artists pursued me.
Oi, Pip, over here, mate. Give us a smile. Stand still for a couple of hours.
Hence the term paparazzi. Things were spiffy, splendid, and spantabulous. And they became even more spantabulous when finally Harry's machine was finished. Huge crowds came to see him off.
Ladies and gentlemen, allow me to introduce inventor and explorer, Harry Biscuit.
Thank you, Pip-Bin. Behold my tunnelling device. Sorry, my trousers have fallen down. I'll try again. Behold my device. A tunnelling machine powered by 10,000 moles. With their help and a massive spoon, I shall bring back meringue for all.
Ripley had taught the man-elephant a trumpet fanfare by patient application of kindness and electrodes.
Do it!
And now, let your journey begin.
Not so fast, Pip-Bin.
Mr. Benevolent.
And I have brought a friend. It is the man-elephant's greatest fear, a man-mouse.
The creature looked exactly like a mouse, except it had the legs of a man. As it scampered around in its tiny brogues, the man-elephant panicked. The crowd scattered in fear, and finally, Harry and I were alone with Mr. Benevolent.
Harry, quick, into the device. We shall tunnel our way away.
Of course. I shall unleash the moles. Wait! No, my moles! Where have they gone?
Do you like my new moleskin suit?
Yes, it's very nice. But where are my moles?
Let me check in my moleskin notebook. Or under these moleskin blankets. Where can they be?
No, I think I understand. They must have nibbled through their harnesses and escaped.
Run free, moley friends.
Oh, never mind. Now, time to destroy you. Let us all get into the machine.
He pulled out a sword, a knife, a pistol, 2 muskets, 12 pieces of field artillery, and a particularly pointy stick. We had no choice but to do what he said.
Isn't this cozy? And it shall become cozier still, because I have replaced the moles with a vast amount of explosives set to go off very shortly.
Surely you will destroy yourself as well.
You forget I am undead. This corporeal form may disintegrate, but I will soon reassemble myself and wreak havoc on the world. You, however, will be utterly destroyed, Pip-Bin.
What about me?
You will also be destroyed, making the sum total of intelligence in the world rise slightly.
Is that a compliment? Hang on, no.
Or is it?
This way I can see the last flicker of light leave your eyes. Witness your dying screams. In about 5 seconds, 4 Mississippi, 3 Mississippi, 2 Mississippi, 1 goodbye.
Goodbye, Harry Biscuit!
Goodbye, Pip-Bin!
Wait! We are not dead. We are moving.
No! I used enough explosive to destroy anything except the 3 hardest substances known to man. What is this capsule made of?
The usual. Teak, dried porridge, and strontium.
There! The 3 hardest substances known to man.
And the explosion has blasted us into the air. We are still climbing.
We rose higher and higher. London dwindled to a speck beneath us. And gradually the blue sky turned an inky purple, then darker yet until it was a deep velvet black.
We are in space.
Oh, this was not part of the plan.
We are alive.
Nor was that.
But alive we were, in space we were, hurtling onwards into the mighty void. Harry and I, trapped with our worst enemy.
Good grief! Marooned in space, and yet somehow you made it back. How?
That is for another day. Return next week, and you shall hear more of the strange secrets I learned of the past, and how I suffered a loss I find hard to bear, even today.
Bleak Expectations was written by Mark Evans and starred Richard Johnson as the Philip Bin, Tom Allen as Young Pip, Anthony Head as Mr. Gently Benevolent, James Barkman as Harry Biscuit, Jeffrey Whitehead as Dr. Whackwallop, Sarah Hadland as Ripley and Lily, Susie Kane as Pippa, and Mark Evans as Sundry Ruffians, Publishers, and a Vegetarian Lion. The producer was Gareth Edwards.
Bleak Expectations by Mark Evans. Volume 3, Chapter the 5th. An Evil Life Sort of Explained.
Ah, sir, well, I am in an excellent mood today.
Should I summon a doctor, sir?
It's all right, I'll take some grumpy pills later. Having a grandson has given me a new lease of life. I feel I could carry on forever, like the British Empire or horse-drawn marmalade dispensers.
Your daughter, son-in-law, and grandson, sir.
Child is crying. Is he sad?
Oh, well done, Father. You have correctly identified an emotion. But he is sad because he is tired. He will sleep if we push his pram up and down. Alas, my enormous hooped skirt prevents me from getting close enough to push.
And I cannot do it, for I am a man.
Hence this device. Behold the patented pram pushing and pulling piston. The piston pushes the pram forward, and then it is pulled back by elastic.
Is it safe?
Perfectly. As long as the engine does not go into overspeed and the elastic does not snap.
Has that happened before?
Only twice.
And how often have you used it?
Twice. Still, third time lucky. Now, where shall I sit? Oh, dear, I have sat on the overspeed button.
Well, at least the elastic's fine.
The elastic is breaking.
It is broken.
The pram has hit the wall.
Hurling the boy through the open window.
He has landed in a tree.
Indeed, in a blackbird's nest.
Oh, yes, and the mummy blackbird is feeding him. Oh, dear, regurgitated worm. What an introduction to solids.
Still, he seems to like it.
Therefore, go and fetch my grandson from that tree.
I shall wear my blackbird costume, sir, so as not to upset the birds.
Meanwhile, we shall continue my story. Last time, you heard how I had been blasted into space with my best friend, Harry Biscuit, and my evil, undead ex-guardian, Mr. Gently Benevolent, in a capsule originally designed to tunnel to the center of the Earth.
Your plan to kill me has failed, Mr. Benevolent.
A temporary setback. I shall simply open the capsule door, or throw you out, and let you plummet back to Earth. You will simultaneously burst and be flattened like a pizza, whose toppings are blood, bone, and intestines.
Is that a Goriana?
The door will not open.
That'll be the pressure of the ether outside. Space is full of the stuff, apparently.
Another temporary setback. I shall simply wait for you to starve to death. I am undead and need no food.
Is there food on board, Harry?
No, for I planned to feast on the meringue, which I believed I would find at the centre of the Earth.
Feeling hungry yet, Pip-Bin?
No, for I breakfasted well.
And I had breakfast, elevenses, lunch, afternoon tea, dinner and my pre-bed snack, all at once. In a meal I call Brevenunch Enerak.
Yet soon your empty stomach will start to gnaw at your insides and claw at your soul.
Your words affect me not, Mr. Benevolent.
Well, they've affected me. I'm starving now. It's like I never even had Brevenant Genarak.
We sat in silence as Harry licked desperately at an old soup stain on his shirt. I stared out at the vast waste of space that was space. So many unanswered questions teemed through my mind. Why do we exist? Is there a life beyond this? Why don't animals have wheels? But before I died, I knew there was at least one mystery I could hope to solve.
Mr. Benevolent, why are you evil?
Well, you've got to have a hobby, haven't you? And I don't like stamps.
Come, before we starve, at least tell us why you are evil.
No.
Go on.
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 No.
This exchange continued for 8 days.
Go on.
Until finally he relented.
Oh, all right, I'll tell you.
He began to talk. I began to listen. And Harry began to try and eat the herring out of his herringbone jacket.
I, Gently Benevolent, was the child of lovely and kindly Benevolent. And like all children outside France, I was not born evil. Alas, my father died when I was young.
That is why you are evil. Well, good story.
That is not why I'm evil. For my mother was a kind and gentle woman, yet with a strange quality to her laugh.
Look, dear Gently, an amusingly shaped vegetable.
After my father's death, we lived alone for some years, until one day my mother made an announcement.
Dear Gently, you are to have a new papa. This is Mr. Hardthrasher.
Hello, boy.
At first, he seemed a splendid new father, even joining in with the games my friends and I played.
What are you playing?
Policeman and thieves, sir.
For a while, all was joy as we played together, but then...
Excellent. We have caught the criminal scum. Now let justice be done. You, and you are to be transported to Australia. And the rest of you shall be hanged.
He personally transported and executed all my friends. And my life became solitary.
At this point, I had a realization.
This Heartthrasher, he was the father of the ones I met and killed.
When I turned evil and sought accomplices, his children from his first marriage were my natural allies.
Sorry to interrupt, but I'm writing a farewell letter to Pippa, and I need to know how to spell Pippa. Is it three P's or only four?
It's 15.
I knew it! Dear Pippa, here am I floating in a tin can, far above the world.
Mr. Benevolent, please continue.
I was fascinated by his tale. Plus, there was a cruel part of me that really enjoyed hearing about my nemesis being on the receiving end.